Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on Sunday, November 5th, 2017. This is episode 1437. A little programming note here, just something behind the scenes. This is the first show in standard time. We set the clock back last night, which meant I arrived about 20 minutes early for the show, which kind of is a problem. I normally get here like 10 seconds before the show begins, and I just launch right into it. This time, I was futzing around, wasn't paying attention, started playing with my Apple Watch, trying to crash it. Little did I know the show had begun. I had the volume down on the feed from the office in Sherman Oaks, so I didn't hear the music. So it's going to be the podcast is going to begin kind of strangely, with me just playing with my watch, and at some point you'll hear me suddenly realize I'm on the air, because John came running in and said, "You're on the air! You're on the air!" So I just started this. I said, "Hello." We kind of confusing way to begin a podcast, but now you know why. Enjoy. The Tech Guy Podcast is brought to you by iFixit, the free online repair manual for everything. Before you start your next build or fix, head over to iFixit.com/twit and snag that fantastic, fully loaded Pro Tech Toolkit. It's only $59.95. It makes a great gift for geeks, too. Check out their array of high-quality parts, tools, and guides while you're there. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. And by Blue Bottle Coffee. Get fresh, high-quality, delicious coffee delivered right to your door. Visit bluebottlecoffee.com/techguy for $10 off your first coffee subscription order. Hey, Siri, what's the weather?
The weather's looking good today, up to 60 degrees.
Well, Mommy, I think it's all right now. It doesn't seem to be a problem.
Oh, it was a daylight saving bug. So if I'd have to ask it before the clock changed. Now what?
You're what?
Oh. I'm sorry. I was playing with my Apple Watch. Hey, everybody. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. My apologies. I was trying to get this Apple Watch to crash because I read that if you asked it, well, let me try again. What's the weather? If you asked it what the weather was, it would crash.
Be nice today.
But it doesn't. Apparently in a daylight saving bug. Hello, everybody. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. See, it snuck up on me. I thought it was an hour. Oh, no, that wouldn't make sense, would it? Because it should be noon, shouldn't it? it's fun. This clock change thing, bad idea. We talk about it every year. Someday we're going to abandon this. I'm told in the beautiful Republic of Hawaii they don't do it. Maybe it's time to move to Hawaii. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. I've been playing with a number of things. I did get, and I talked about it on the last show, but just in case you weren't listening, I know you don't listen every show. It's okay. I forgive you. I was talking about the iPhone X. I'll give you the skinny, the TLDR, as the kids say. Too long, didn't read. Bottom line, wow. I didn't expect to like it this much. I really didn't. The new iPhone X has a very nice screen. I've played with OLED screens for years. I mean, after all, I use a Samsung Galaxy Note. I've used that for years, a Samsung Galaxy S. When did they start doing OLED? Right from the beginning, right? S1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. So it's not like I've never seen one of these. But Apple, and they did get this screen from Samsung, but Apple apparently did their own thing. They told Samsung how to make the screen. One of the things they're kind of crowing about is, and we told them not to do burn-in. No burn-in on this screen. Or as Google calls it, differential aging. Google's having all sorts of problems with the OLED screens it got from LG. Not this screen. Man, this screen is gorgeous. The phone feels good. I was ready to hate that notch at the top. You know, that notch didn't bother me. You get used to it. Don't see it a lot of the times. And when you do, it's like, yeah, there's a notch. Big deal. Face recognition. Face ID. It works nicely. When it doesn't work, and occasionally in odd lighting situations mostly, it doesn't work. But it works so quickly and easily and transparently that sometimes you just forget that you had to unlock the phone. It just does it. And most of the time it's that. And when it doesn't unlock because of the weird lighting conditions, you enter a six-digit PIN and boom, you're in, which I don't mind. And it does seem to learn. It does seem to learn. So, you know what? Apple, you did a great job. The edge-to-edge screen means that the phone is smaller in the hand, but the screen itself is, you know, technically, you know, Apple says I think they say 5.8 inches, which is bigger than the iPhone 7 Plus or 8 Plus, which is a 5.5 inch screen. But that's only if you measure it diagonally. And because of the Face ID and the UI, the new UI, the notch at the top, the stuff they have to put at the bottom to remind you there's no home button, you got to slide it up. Because of that, you don't really get as much screen real estate. So you kind of have to carve out a little bit at the top, a little bit at the bottom. So it's a little smaller, actually, in reusable size to the iPhone 8 Plus or 7 Plus. But it's bigger than the 8 or 7, the little ones. So I think it's just actually right. It's just right. It's perfect. I hate to say that. You know, I admit it, I wanted to ding this phone. It was so, the only thing I can find wrong, okay? I will tell you the things I've found wrong with this phone. I've only had it for a couple of days now. Although, I have been playing with my precious quite a bit. Even in the middle of the night. have you ever do that with a new phone? Where you just, you know, you got a new phone and you wake up and you can't stop playing with it? Glad Bill Handel's not here to come up with some nasty joke, I'm sure. But the phone, two things wrong with it. It still doesn't have a headphone jack. I can live with that. I can live with that. Got the AirPods, you know, it's okay. I got the adapters. Bought a bunch of them last time. So, you know, and they're all over the place. And it's really, really expensive. And in a way, I hate to say, this is why I didn't want to say good things. I wanted to say, oh, don't worry about this phone. You don't need it. It's not that good. It's, you know, it's, I really wanted to be able to tell people you don't need to spend the $1,000+ for this phone. And you don't. I mean, you don't. You don't. If you have a 6, a 6S, you don't. If you have a, there's lots of great phones. You don't need this phone. But I'm glad. I'm glad I spent $1,150 on it. It's kind of breathtakingly expensive. But it just feels good. It works. It's got a great screen. Man. Don't drop it. I don't buy Apple Care Plus because it's expensive. I believe in self-insuring. But maybe this is the time to buy Apple Care Plus because if you crack the screen, you need a new screen. That's $260. And any other repair, Apple says, any other repair besides the screen is $500. Starts at $500-some. So if you crack the back, for instance, $500. So I got this thing in a giant case with a cover. I'm not going to, if I drop this and break it, it's too expensive to replace. Too expensive to replace. So that's, I wanted to hate it. Because I wanted to be able to come to you and say you don't need it, you don't get it. If you're in the market for a new iPhone and you can see your way clear to spending a lot of money, it's worth it. It's worth it. Now, I still don't have the new Google phone, the Pixel 2 XL. I get that in a couple of weeks because I got a weird color combination that's not in stock. But I'll let you know. But judging from what I've seen of our friend Jason Howell has it, and he looks terrible. And I went to the Verizon store and played with them. The screen is not very good. It's an OLED screen, but not as good as this one that Apple made. So they did it. They did it. And you know what's amazing? You know what's amazing? Apple's, according to their quarterly results, sold the iPhone 8 better than any phone before. And they're going to do the same with this. This company can't not make money. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, no, no, no. Time to talk high tech. Kim Schaffer is here. Were you here an hour early? I was here early, Kim Schaffer. This was ridiculous. I don't like this at all. I got here early.
You did get here early.
And it confused me.
I was shocked to see your car outside.
Well, and it confused me because then I forgot that the radio show started.
And I couldn't do anything about it.
You were sitting there watching me make a fool of myself.
I didn't hear the music.
No, I had it turned off. Don't get here. See, okay, so should we give people the inside scoop on Leo? He gets here 30 seconds before the show begins. He walks in, right?
Very true.
Yeah.
Usually.
And now you know why. Because if I get here too early, I get cocky. I get complacent. I lose track of what time it is. I hate this clock thing. We've got to stop this.
Yeah, I don't know why we do it.
Stop the insanity.
I didn't get here an hour early. But I also woke up earlier than I wanted to.
Well, that's
to,
what so. Happened is I was up and I thought, well, I might as well go to work.
Yeah.
Not doing anything, playing video games here. So you, thank goodness, you did get here on time, and you've picked up the line, and people have been calling. I don't know why. I guess they want to talk to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And since the iPhone 10 is all the rage right
let's
now,
let's do it.
Patrick in Lafayette has a couple questions about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I this was not easy getting an iPhone 10. Let me tell you, this involves getting up late at night and more. Patrick Lafayette, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Kim. Hello, Patrick.
How you doing, Leo?
I am well, sir.
I tell you what, when I get time on Sundays, I'll listen to you when between football games and stuff. But today, you're really cracking me up about this iPhone 10. This is funny. I mean, you crack me up on
why
this.
Why am I cracking you up? What's funny about it? Well, now, I'm not intentionally funny. Did I wanted to hate it? Is that what cracks you up?
Listen, yeah, listen. If we actually take that expensive phone you have...
I know, I'm so embarrassed to have this phone. It's too expensive.
If we take it and we do a drop test...
No!
With my Moto Z4.
Oh, yeah, your Z4 should be fine, yeah.
We'll do the drop test 50 times from a 12-foot ladder on concrete.
You won't have to. This iPhone will break the first time. Are you kidding? You look at it funny, the thing will crack.
You know, I just don't see spending that kind of money.
I agree with
you. Android will do everything that phone will do.
So really, that's true about let's use cars as an analogy. Okay,
mm-hmm.
You can buy a Pinto, and it right. will do every. It's got four wheels, a brake, a gas pedal.
Right.
It'll do everything right. a Ferrari will do. A little slower, maybe, right. but essentially, it's right. completely functional. And I think right. that's kind of – this is a luxury device. And I think one of the things we yeah. really have to acknowledge about Apple and it's, is that they're a luxury device yeah. maker. They're a Louis Vuitton. They're a Pierre Cardin.
Yeah.
They make fancy stuff at high prices.
You know, I tell all my friends that have iPhones, I said, you know what? That's a girl's phone.
Now I'm laughing.
That's a girl.
Now I'm. Wait a minute. Let me check. No, I'm wearing pants. It's
a girl phone.
It's a girly phone. Well, I don't know if that's fair. But you know, if you're, you know what really is the truth? It's a tech fetish thing.
Right.
If you're really into technology and you fetishize it and you say my life is going to be better if I have the shiny new thing and oh I can't
right.
wait
right.
then it's you're right it's not gonna it probably isn't gonna make phone calls as well as your Z Force frankly
right.
Android is far more customizable. I think the iPhone probably is more secure. I'm still concerned about Android security, especially if you don't get those security patches. But that's more of a theoretical threat than a realistic
right.
threat, right? Although a million people downloaded a phony WhatsApp that was on the Google Play Store, right? That was not didn't happen to anybody owning an Apple phone. So I'm not I don't want to carry water for Apple. I think they make very expensive products. They're a fashion company as much as a technology company. But when they make a good product, it would be biased of me not to acknowledge that they've made a good product, and they have.
And then they're copying technology Android had for years.
Oh, I agree. I agree. Apple finally had to put notifications in, and they don't do it as well as Android does. Android allows you to customize the user interface, the front mm-hmm. page, in some very nice ways. And Apple, all you get is a grid of icons, you know, you better like
not
it.
Not only that, but with Android, look at the devices that you buy today.
You have choice.
With Android technology.
You have choice.
I mean, everything is going with Android today. You have built-in stereo systems in trucks and cars.
Right.
It's all Android-based. TVs.
Well, there's a reason for that. Stereo. And Apple does not give away its operating system. Google does. It's free.
Mm.
So there is a reason for that. And it's one of the reasons, actually, Android's less secure, because anybody can make an Android device, and there's no guarantee that that's going to get updated. Apple says, no, you can't have iOS. Only we can make iOS. And furthermore, a phone company, if you want to sell an iOS phone, you have to let us update it whenever we gosh darn well want to. So I understand, and I think one of the reasons I really wanted to find flaws in this phone is I'm embarrassed to tell people this is this $1,150 phone. I'm embarrassed to say I bought it. And I'm embarrassed to say it's good, and I even think it's worth it. However, if you, I don't think you have to have it, and I understand. Now, let me ask, what kind of truck you drive?
Well, I have two work trucks. Well, I have three trucks, actually.
Okay.
They're all Ford.
Okay. You got an F-150, a modern Ford?
I got a 2017 F-150, okay. And I got two 2007 F-250 diesels.
Okay, so now you're going to justify it because I need it for work, right?
Mm-hmm.
I use it. It's a work truck for me, but you bought a pretty nice truck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you paid a little bit more for that truck. So some people are truck peoples, and some people are phone peoples. Look, we live in a consumer economy, and thank goodness you and I, Frank, Patrick, we're doing our job spending money to keep this economy rolling along.
You're right about that.
Hey, it's really great to talk to you, Patrick. I love Lafayette, one of my favorite regions of the country. When is the Crawfish Festival coming? Pretty soon?
Well, actually, it was right at springtime. It was in April.
So I'm going to come.
It'll be till April again.
I'm coming in April. Save some of that hot sauce for me, okay?
I'll tell you what, it's good.
I love it. It's great to talk to you, Patrick. Good. Yeah, you know, okay, see, I got him. I busted him. I had a feeling. I knew. I could tell. He has some nice trucks. And so it's kind of like that. It's less expensive than a vehicle, right? Some people are Pinto people. Some people are F-250 diesel people. And some people are iPhone 10 people. It is embarrassing, though. You know, the new shiny, right? I hate to admit it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. We'll get back to your calls in just a sec. I should have asked him how many dogs he has. And I'm glad he didn't ask me what kind of car I have, because I would have been busted back. Larry in Petaluma? Hey, Larry.
Hey, Julio. How are you?
It's good to talk to you. Just down the road a piece.
Just down the road. Actually, I should drop in for some of that coffee. It sounds good.
Oh, you'd be more than welcome. I'd make you a cup if you come in.
I may show up.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I have the issue of I've got a desktop PC running Windows 10. Had it for about a year. And I'm thinking about putting in an SSD.
Oh, yeah, you'll love it. Oh, yes.
Yeah. What I want to know is there an easy way to clone the C drive onto an SSD, or is it a
you
big
bet.
Deal?
No, it's exactly the same as any hard drive. This operating system doesn't know the difference. So the SSD will come with cloning software in most cases, or you go to the manufacturer's site. almost all, in fact, as far as I know, all drive manufacturers offer free downloads of basic cloning software for this very reason. You get a new drive, it'll probably come with software. They'll have a link in the pamphlet there. I can't call it a manual, but the pamphlet will have a link, and you just download the software. And what it does, the idea is you want a sector by sector copy. You don't want it to be intelligent about it. You just want it to copy it sector by sector. Okay. Now, is it a desktop or a laptop?
It's a desktop.
Okay, so you can get in there and put a second drive in?
Right.
Because that's what you're going to do. You're going to make it the D drive, the second drive, run that software, copy the C to the D, then my suggestion would be just swap the cables or indicate somehow to the computer, depends on the computer, that you're booting now from the SSD. You've got that second drive, the original, still in there. It could either be a data drive or just think of it as a backup. In case the
Actually, it does have a small, I think it's a hybrid drive in there. It already does have a C and D drive. So that's what I was concerned about, because I've already got my data on the D, but I want to get everything off the C onto this new drive.
Yes.
Is that possible?
Sure. So if it is a hybrid drive, it'll look like one drive. Because the way Intel does it, Apple does it, they put a small SSD, in the case of Intel, very small, sometimes 32 gig SSD.
That's what it is then. Yeah, actually, it's got 149 gigabytes. It's listed on the Windows C drive. Yeah. I don't remember it being an actual SSD, but maybe it is.
Well, if it's a hybrid, that's what they do.
That's what it is, I think.
Yeah, and then they do – I don't think they – maybe they make hybrid drives that have – they might, actually, with some SSD on the circuit board, you know, some solid-state memory on the circuit board, and then a spinning drive in the case. In either event, if it's really doing the hybrid thing, it would look like a single drive, unless you detach them, which you could do, but it came with a C and a D drive.
It came with a C and a D, and actually when I bought it, I seem to remember it was some kind of cache, SSD cache or something. I don't really remember.
Well, that's the idea of a hybrid drive is that it looks like a single drive, but the operating system or the drive is smart enough to put the stuff that you need fastest or that you access the most on the SSD and put the other stuff on the spinning drive, but it should be transparent to you. So if you see a C and a D drive, go into your your storage management utility, you know, Windows key X disk management, and look at what the actual physical drives are as well as the partitions of the drives. And that should give you some idea. It sounds like you don't have a hybrid drive. You have a single drive with two partitions or maybe two drives. In any event, if you have a SATA cable and put this third drive in or the second drive in, the new SSD in, it's all right if it's E. It doesn't matter. Okay. And you just clone the boot drive, which is always C in Windows. It's always the C drive.
Okay, I'm looking at the disk management now. It says disk zero, which that's
your C drive. Yeah, that's the boot drive. Yeah.
Okay, and then Windows is on that.
Yep.
And then disk one is a Toshiba. Oh, that's an external. No, disk. That's my external, which is hooked up. Okay, you're right. It's one disk. One drive that's partitioned into C.
That's what it is. D. Yeah. In fact, you could clone the whole drive if you have enough room on the new SSD. Usually SSDs, because they're more expensive per gigabyte, are smaller than the spinning drives. But if you get an SSD the same size, you said it's 149, you probably will. You get a 256 gig SSD. You can clone the whole thing, and it'll still have a C partition and a D partition, because a real cloner even clones the partitioning. It doesn't look at what's going on. It just says sector one to sector one, sector two to sector two, like that. It's very mechanical.
But the D drive has 1.71 gigabytes.
Oh, okay. There you go. Well, you're not probably going to. Yeah.
So I just want to clone the C drive. I just want to clone the C drive, right? Can I just clone the C partition of that?
Is it terabyte or gigabyte? Because if it's 1.1 gigabytes, you don't care. It must be terabytes.
It says 1712.41 gigabytes.
1712. So that's 1.7 terabytes. So and how big is the SSD? It's not going to be that big.
I don't have the SSD yet, but the Windows is on a drive that says 150 gigabytes.
Yeah. So get a two. And now you probably haven't filled up that 1.7 terabytes anyway. What you should look at is how much data you've used. If you wish, here's what I would do. I would clone the C drive to the SSD using the software provided by the disk manufacturer. Swap the cables and make the spinning drive. Keep the spinning drive unless you're getting rid of it because it's worn out. But it's fine. You just want a faster machine. So keep the spinning drive. Make that your D drive. Make the SSD your C drive with Windows on it. You can get rid of the Windows partition on the D drive once you've satisfied yourself that it's booting fine and it's running off, you know, everything worked in the cloning process. And now you have a nice big, which is what you want, 2 terabyte data drive. That's kind of the way I like to do it, actually. The SSDs are so expensive per gigabyte, it's usually better just to put Windows and the apps on that. All your programs and Windows go on the spinning on the SSD, and the spinning drive is your data drive, your D drive, and all your documents and data can go there. And now you got lots of room for data, which is what you want.
Yeah. Okay, that was my plan, and so I'll just get a 250
256 is plenty. Yeah.
Yeah. And then clone the Windows C drive onto that and then swap cables and then make the D and expand the D to fill up the whole thing.
And because you haven't erased the D yet, if something goes wrong, you can go back and figure out what went wrong.
Great. And I have Carbonitis as
good.
A loyal.
Good. Your data is backed up. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Worst case scenario, you can just because it's a Windows 10 machine, you can download from Microsoft another copy of Windows 10 and install it on that machine. It will automatically activate. So if it all goes to heck, you can just install Windows in the SSD and start fresh.
Okay, good. I didn't know if there would be any registry problems or anything like that.
No. I mean, you'd have to reinstall your apps and all that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, big upgrade. SSDs, the solid-state drives, are the same kind of memory, roughly, the flash memory that you use in a camera or a USB, thumb drive. They're faster. It's special memory. There's different kinds and so forth. But essentially, that's the idea. There's no moving parts. It's solid state. Initially, people were concerned that they wouldn't be as reliable or that they'd wear out faster. And that's actually not been the case. They've been very reliable. They don't wear out. I would say they're probably more reliable than anything that's moving with moving parts, spinning disk and a head that moves around. Those physical, spinning drives are probably less reliable. And man, they're slower. So an SSD is so fast that nowadays I wouldn't buy a computer with a spinning disk for the applications, for the boot. You always want to boot the operating system on an SSD. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And the Samsung EVOs, they are cheap now, aren't they? A terabyte, $330. I mean, still more expensive than a terabyte spinning drive, but it's not bad. So what's funny is Alan Malventano, our SSD expert from PC Perspective, if you don't have trim in your operating system or you can't trigger it, he says, just defrag. There's no need for defragmentation, obviously, on an SSD. It's random access. There's no benefit to reorganizing it. In fact, you don't want to defrag it usually because you don't want to counter the wear leveling that an SSD is using. But he says, but the good news is if you run a defrag on an SSD, it will trigger trim. You don't want to do it all the time, but it'll trigger trim, which is not a bad thing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. This is going to be a fun Sunday. We're just going to talk tech. We're just going to take calls, talk tech. All of that. Mike Maine. Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you. Leo Laporte.
Good to talk to you, too. You're doing all these time songs today.
Yes, because of Mike Cozio. He's brilliant.
The old DJ in me comes up, and the song you really need to be playing is either Marshall Crenshaw version or the original version by the Jive 5 of What Time Is It?
All right.
Listen to the clock.
And Chicago, does anybody really know what time it is?
There we go.
Time keeps on slipping into the future. I'm an old DJ, too.
Yeah, I know you are. I think I'm older than you.
Well, you probably know whether you're older than me or not. But, you can ask Siri how old I am. It's so embarrassing.
We're actually the exact same age.
Aha.
That's another story.
I got my Class 3 DJ license from the FCC, because in those days you had to have a license to do this. in December 1976. So last year I celebrated my 40th year as a broadcaster.
Yeah, I've got mine sitting around someplace too, that little yellow card.
Yeah. Yellow. It's yellow now, believe me. Yellow with age. Fortunately, no FCC inspector will ask for it anymore, so I guess I don't really need it. What can I do for you today?
Well, I've got two questions for you, and I hope you'll have time for both. One is just a little battery-saving thing for my iOS. I just upgraded to 11.1, and I'm very happy with it. It's working fine. Haven't noticed a lot of battery issues with it. But I'm wondering about, in the settings, many apps want you to do a background app refresh and want to keep the location services on all the time. Now, I only use location services while using. I just turn that off automatically. But the background app refresh, I have that off in most everything that I don't need to have, like, email coming in or whatever to save batteries. What particular thing should I leave it on for, or does it really make any difference?
It's not merely battery. It's a privacy issue as well, because apps can send your location back to the home office. So I think lots of people do this, and it's a good idea. Apple makes it easy, because they have an actual entry in the settings for location services, and you can go app by app and deny. I would do it on anything that you a map program you want, obviously. Although I guess you don't really care about the map program until you launch it. The thing is, if you don't have background turned on, it might take a while to figure out where you are.
So background app refresh should be kept on anything that you want.
Anything with nav, I would leave it on. There are other things that sometimes, for instance, Twitter, Google, and many social networks, Facebook, like to know where you are. It's a kind of a creepy thing when you launch Facebook and it says, hey, I see you're at the library. Would you like to share your check-in?
Just to clarify, that's a little creepy.
Yeah.
I'm asking about two things, not only the location, but background app refreshing, two different settings.
Well, it's related because, of course, that's what it's refreshing in many cases. So if it's email, it's not refreshing location. It's downloading emails, checking the email. So first of all, Apple does a very good job of managing the battery. So for most people, unless you are having battery issues, you probably – this is a finesse you probably don't need. In modern operating systems, you just let the thing do what it's supposed to do because it does a very good job. Apple shuts down background apps. It will ask you, as you probably noticed from time to time, hey, Facebook's refreshing in the background. Do you want that? I don't let social networks refresh in the background. Always turn that off. In fact, I turn off location services for social networks. There's no benefit to that.
Great. Well, let me go to the other question then, which may be a bit more complicated. You know how we hate Auto Run, how we go into a browser, and we go to read something, and all of a sudden a video starts.
Oh, it drives me nuts.
Crazy. Well, on my Roku now, whenever I go to Netflix.
Oh, God, if you find it. I know, I hate it. Thank you.
I don't use Netflix anymore.
Yes.
I just watch Amazon Prime.
Why did you do this? So what he's saying, and this is true, as you browse through Netflix, and I don't know if it – I think it only is Roku. I don't see this on other devices, but maybe so. As you browse through it, it starts playing either a trailer or an actual episode of whatever you're looking at.
You can't stop it. There's no way to turn it off.
I looked everywhere. If anybody knows, they will be doing you and me a mitzvah, Mike, because it drives me crazy too. This is not a good user interface feature, Netflix. Please turn it off. You know why they do it. Netflix has really gotten smart about getting you to watch more Netflix. For instance, when you end a show, the next one starts, right? They show the credits, but then the next one will start. And now they've gone the next step, which is auto-playing as soon as you're highlighting it, which makes it very difficult to browse Netflix.
It just makes it really it's untenable. I just can't use it.
I know what you mean.
And part of it is because I understand they don't want people to be sitting there in silence because nobody can sit in silence.
No one can sit in silence anymore. No siree.
But I just want to read what's going on before I decide what I'm going to watch, you know?
You can disable the next show thing so it doesn't autoplay the next show. But as far as I know, because this is something relatively new and it drives me nuts too, Mike. I don't know how to turn that off. If anybody does, please call, text, email, write, go to the website, put it in the comments. Help us because this
is
to
the point
terrible.
Where I'm going to unsubscribe because it's just not worth it any longer.
Yeah. We want to turn off that background Sometimes it's a tease. Sometimes it's actually from an episode playing as you're browsing the Netflix guide looking for the next show to watch. They're just doing it to get you. And I guess you could mute the sound. Somebody's saying that. But you're still going to have that thing playing in the background. And by the way, that means it's downloading it while that's happening, right? So it's using your bandwidth.
Yep.
So I think this is actually something we could write to Netflix and say, dude, knock it off. I only get a terabyte from Comcast, and you're eating my bandwidth.
Absolutely. Yeah. I hope they rethink it. And again, I can't figure – I understand it's only with Roku, and it's certain Rokus. A friend of mine has an older Roku.
Wait a minute.
Do it.
Wait a minute. We may have found the answer thanks to Mike B. in our chat room. This is from the Roku help page. We'll put a link in the show notes. How to turn off Netflix autoplay of currently highlighted show. Basically, go to your Netflix account on the web and go to account settings, test participation off.
No, tried that, found that, tried it, turned it off. Doesn't make a difference.
You know why? Because this used to be a test, but now it's real.
Right, exactly. Yep, found that one, tried it.
Yeah, this is from December of last year, and I guess they were testing it, and it tested well, because now they're doing it.
Well, nobody goes to the website to do anything with those settings anyway half the time, so nobody even knows it exists.
Yeah. I'm going to go to my Netflix page, and I'm going to see if I can find something, because that is driving me. You know what? It's so funny you should say that, because of course, we're all trying to watch Stranger Things last night, and it's driving me crazy. I don't want to see that. I'm trying to, you know, it's crazy. Thank you, Mike, for bringing that up.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. Now let's, about this Netflix autoplay. Now, this is on the Roku, but do other, like, if you have Netflix on an Xbox, does it do that? If you have Netflix on Amazon, Fire TV, does it do that? Does it do it on other devices, or is Netflix only inflicting this on us on Roku? And Netflix, you should have asked us. I know it is an experiment last year. Now that it's a reality, please stop. Please, please stop. Lately I've been using the Apple. I got the new Apple TV, the 4K, and I've been using that for Netflix. I don't know. I'll have to try it. I don't remember if it does it on there. I know it drives me crazy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Toll-free in the U.S. and Canada. Give me a ring. Let's talk high-tech. More of your calls right after this. Hey, can I tell you about our sponsor today? It's a good sponsor. One of my favorites. We have them on the show all the time because they do such great stuff. I'm talking about iFixit.com. And, you know, we get a lot of it. We give them a lot of attention because of their teardowns. They flew to Australia and waited in line so they'd get an iPhone 10 the minute it came out and tear it down. So that is one of the great things about iFixit. It's certainly where they get a lot of attention. We talked about it yesterday on the new screensavers. But that's not really what iFixit's about. Look at their website, iFixit.com/twit. The free repair guide for everything written by everyone. So if you look at their teardowns, those are always a lot of fun. And you can see the iPhone 10 teardown and everything that's inside it. And they talk about what chips and so forth. But this is all to a great purpose. The right to repair. And in order to repair, you need two things. You need the manuals, the how-to, and you need the tools, and you need the parts. So that's three things, isn't it? iFixit does it all. I love it. iFixit. In fact, if it's gift giving time for a geek or a friend, maybe your fix it guy, you got to go to iFixit.com/twit and take a look at the ProTech toolkit. We have them all over the house. I bought a bunch so I could saturate the house because I'm always looking for my ProTech toolkit because it's so useful for fixing stuff. $59.95. And it includes a 64-bit driver kit that is beautiful. Just beautiful. All the bits you need for any kind of DIY repair, from an iPhone to the McDonald's Happy Meals. Yes. Yes. They actually have a bit for the McDonald's Happy Meal. It's amazing. All the bits come in a protective case that keeps your bits organized. You open it up, you flip it over, the bits are in there. It is the greatest. I love the iFixit toolkit. Let me see if I can find it here for you and show you all the stuff you get. You get spudgers. The bit kit is held in place by a magnetic mat. Great place to hold those tiny components and screws. Swivel top magnetic precision driver for the bits, which makes it very easy to unscrew stuff no matter where you are. There it is, the Protec toolkit. I love this thing. A flex extension, so you can get hard-to-reach screws. All the picks you can safely poke and pry with. This is what you got to have. There's a suction cup with a fancy new handle. You need that to remove the display assemblies on computers and phones. iFixit also has its own rubber-handled Jimmy Pry tool and a set of metal spudgers that make it very easy to get into anything. And, oh, yes, ESD safes tweezers, so there's no electrostatic discharge. And a safety strap, of course, so you can protect your stuff. And, of course, all the iFixit tools are backed by a lifetime warranty. I can't tell you how often I use this. I just use it all the time. That lifetime warranty. Make sure you can, you know, you're never going to be without. You need them all. And by the way, iFixit is always there for free. They're free repair resources. You don't need to buy something to check that out. 25,000 free repair guides. Such a fan of iFixit. Really glad to have them as a sponsor. Last year, we gave all the Twit hosts iFixit Protec toolkits as their holiday gift. A great holiday gift for yourself, for the geek in your life. The iFixit Protec toolkit. Go to ifixit.com/twit. Snag it for yourself and get one for a friend. Broken isn't the end. Get the Protec toolkit at ifixit.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, Netflix, Roku, all that jazz. I don't even mention the TV players, but that's a big topic, isn't it? Apple TV and Roku and Fire TV, Amazon's Fire TV, NVIDIA Shield, Android TV. There's so many ways now you can put content on your TV. We can talk about that too. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. If you watched the World Series, you saw how much, boy, I wonder what YouTube spent on the World Series. Because they were all over it, everywhere. They had ads, they had buttons, they had logos, they had placement, even, and it kind of bothered some people, but behind the batter, you know, that little billboard area on the cage behind the batter to protect the fans. They had a YouTube ad. YouTube TV is what they're advertising. YouTube TV ad with a YouTube play button, and it just happened, complete coincidence, to be right in the middle of the screen, right the exact size that a YouTube play button would be. And more than a few people, mostly OCD types like me, said, "Knock it off!" Every time I'm watching the World Series, I want to push the play button. Yeah, that was good. That was some good marketing. They're pushing their. Actually is a pretty good deal. I have a $35 cable TV replacement called YouTube TV that gives you live local stations. It has, by the way, the best guide of anybody, any cable company, any set top box. It's a really nice, you know, guide to what's on. And when you hover the mouse, now this is a good use of autoplay. When you hover the mouse over the preview, what's on channel 7 right now? You hover the mouse over it, it starts playing. It doesn't do the audio, but you can see what's going on live. And then you move it up a little, you know, you go up to the next one and you can see. That's really cool. And it's $35. It has DVRs up to 5 different users. Everybody in the family can have their own DVR. I don't mean to be doing an ad for it, but no one needs to. The ad on the World Series, the 30-second ad on the World Series, I think was $500,000 to $600,000. YouTube must have spent conservatively $10 million or more on the World Series advertising. Huge amount. And the interesting thing is, I don't think YouTube makes money for Netflix. I'm sorry, Netflix for Google. Google owns YouTube. I don't think YouTube makes money for Google. Because there's ads all over it. And in fact, you can buy an ad-free version called YouTube Red for, I think, $7 a month. But so they make money, but I don't think they make a profit because, boy, think about it. They're paying all the bandwidth for uploading videos and downloading videos. They've got must have massive servers all over the country. And admittedly, Google probably has relationships with Comcast and other internet service providers. They call them peering. This is kind of the dirty little secret of internet bandwidth. They call them peering arrangements. Comcast says, well, we won't charge you for the bandwidth you use if you don't charge us for the bandwidth we use. And these are a lot of peering arrangements. So a lot of companies that might have huge bandwidth costs don't, because they make a deal with internet service providers. I don't know if YouTube has a peering deal with the big internet service providers. Maybe not. Maybe not. But it's because if you're Comcast, you don't love YouTube TV, right? That's the cord cutter's dream. But of course, Comcast now has realized that there are plenty of people, especially young people, who aren't buying cable television. They're buying cable internet. So they've raised the price of cable internet to the point where they're still making money off of you. They're no fools. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Kurt is on the line from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Bagosh. Hi, Kurt.
How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. Well, I was freaking out until this morning.
Uh-oh. What was going on?
As I was the last man on Earth to join Facebook.
Wait a minute. You joined Facebook, like, recently?
Like, just a couple weeks ago.
Is it too late to tell you, stop? Okay, go ahead.
And I'm 51, so I think I'm good.
You know, Facebook is a love-hate thing for people because it really does connect you with family and friends that, you know, you probably are going, wow. There's my high school sweetheart. Things like that.
Yeah, I tell you, the only reason I did it was to stay in touch with my son, who's in the military.
Perfect. Perfect.
So, what happened was I just did a few little posts in these last couple weeks to get the hang of it. 2 days ago, I got a couple pictures I wanted to post. So I posted them, and it was working fine. And I was being able to negotiate Facebook. Saturday morning, I go to log in, and an odd message came up, said, there's been an unusual amount of activity on your account. Please upload a picture of yourself.
With a driver's license?
No. It said just a picture of yourself.
A picture? That's all you had to upload is a picture?
Yeah.
Facebook sometimes does this, and they want a proof. They want a picture of a ID as well. Interesting.
Okay. So being the virgin Facebooker here, I took a 6 o'clock in the morning selfie of me and hit upload.
I don't know why they would ask for that, actually, because didn't you put a picture in your profile?
It was the picture of my, no, I did not.
Ah.
I didn't get that far yet.
So you just created an account. So understand what Facebook is worried about, and they're more worried about it now, is fake accounts. They're really worried because they're getting dinged by Congress for fake Russian accounts that were, you know, being used to purchase Facebook ads to weigh in on our presidential election. So Facebook's very nervous about these accounts. And the fact that you didn't finish your profile probably was a red flag. Like, oh, this could be a bot. That's what they call a fake account. It could be a bot. So it's funny that all they would ask for is a picture.
Well, so the next thing was, so after I uploaded the picture, the next message came up says, we're going to log you off while we verify you. In the meantime, you're logged off for security reasons.
Yeah.
Well, that's when I went into a, you know, semi-catatonic, you know, oh my God.
By the way, this is the love-hate thing I was talking about, right? Yeah. You love it because you can stay in touch with your son who's overseas. But you hate it because they own you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I didn't do nothing all day but try to keep logging on. And in the meantime, I called you because I thought, I've been listening to this guy for eternity, but I've never...
Finally, a reason to call Leo. Yeah.
Exactly. But I missed you yesterday, so I woke up this morning and thought, I'm going to try one more time, and I logged on like nothing was happening.
Yeah, because they verified you. So this is, in fact, I'm looking at a Facebook page that I will send you. I won't send it to you because I don't have your address, but I'll put it on the website. How about that? TechGuyLabs.com. Yep. That shows what you got, which says, upload a photo of yourself. Please upload a photo of yourself which clearly shows your face.
Yes.
Now, the privacy the privacy concern here is, well, what does that do? And my feeling is they probably have so much face recognition information that they can actually look at that picture and say, oh, yeah, that's Kurt. Remember that one of the things they know is where you're from. So they see, oh, somebody is logged in from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Kurt says he's from Oshkosh. That's a plus. We've got a picture of Kurt, which we can match to other pictures. Maybe friends uploaded pictures of you and tagged them, things like that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Kurt. It's not some Russian bot. Okay, we'll let him have account. So that's all that happened. It's harmless. Now, there is a concern about Facebook, which you should know about, but I have to take a break, so don't go anywhere. I will. When we come back, I'm going to tell you what not to do next time you're on Facebook. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. They say sometimes it takes as long as 72 hours for that approval. Isn't that interesting? Yeah, so that's, yeah, they're really concerned now about fake accounts. That's what's going on, Kurt.
Okay.
But it's harmless. But I think it's an unfortunate thing because it gets you in the mood to send Facebook stuff. And a bad guy could spoof this kind of thing and said, well, send me a picture of your driver's license or what's your credit card information? I need your... Here's one that you don't want to ever do. I need your social security number.
Right.
And you know better than doing that. But what this does, and this is why I don't like Facebook doing this, does two things. One, it makes me, it weirds me out because like that was all they needed. They know enough about you to know that that's you from your picture. They must have picture data, right, about you. And you just joined. So that's problem.
Yeah, I just did it.
That's problem number one. Problem number two is it kind of gets you in the mood now when Facebook says, well, that worked. If Facebook asks you for something, Facebook, and I'm putting that in air quotes, asks you for something else, you might give it to them. Oh, you know, thank you for the picture. That was great. But just to make sure, what are the last four digits of your social? Something like that. And you really you want to be careful about what you give Facebook. I have been told, and this bothers me, that they will sometimes ask for picture ID, a picture of picture ID to verify your identity. And I would be very reluctant to send that to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because your driver's license, now they're getting more than you might be bargaining for. Another thing, and I'll mention this when we come back, you now that you're new to Facebook, remember that you're giving them information every time you use it. And one of the things that people do is that they start playing on Facebook, and there's these Facebook quizzes. And be careful about those. You see them, and you'll start seeing people share them. Oh, you know, I'm Cersei in the Game of Thrones. What Game of Thrones character are you? And you click a link, and you take a questionnaire, and it's fun, and it gives you a picture of you as Cersei or whatever. But that is a risky proposition because that leaks information about you. As soon as you take that quiz, that page has access to your private information and your friend's private information. And so it leaks a lot of information. That's the main problem with Facebook in general is you're giving this company, this massive company, a lot of information about yourself. And you just might want to think about whether you want to do that. It's such a great tool for staying in touch with friends. And I have a Facebook account.
And I'll tell you, the other thing I thought odd is I can't call 800 a number like I can Apple or
there's
my credit
card. There's no human there. But it's a free service. What, are they going to spend time helping you?
Well, I think Mr. Zuckerberg could.
He could afford it. He said when they testified in Congress, they said we're going to double the number of safety people from 10,000 to 20,000 employees. That's going to cost us a lot of money. But you're right. They make plenty of money.
Yeah, yeah.
They have 2 billion users. That's incredible. So, I understand why somebody would want to be on Facebook. I would be circumspect about what you put up there.
Yep. Okay.
Okay?
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Kurt.
And I love your show.
Thank you. I'm so glad you listened. Nice to meet you. Thanks. Thank you. Take care. So I was talking to Kurt from Oshkosh about Facebook. Brand new to Facebook. Amazing, isn't that? Somebody hasn't... I mean, Facebook has now 2 billion monthly active users. 2 billion. There's only 7 billion humans. And probably there's only maybe 3 billion internet users, something like that. So they've got a good, you know, good sizable portion of the entire internet using community on Facebook. Who doesn't use Facebook, right? And I agree, there's wonderful things that Facebook can let you do, stay in touch with family, friends, community. But I explained to Kurt, be very careful about what you share with Facebook. Think about anything you do with Facebook as putting it out in public. Not only does Facebook have access to it, but every once in a while, the mistakes happen. Private information leaks out of Facebook. They hand it over. I told him, be very careful. For instance, I know you all do this. You take those Facebook quizzes. You know those? Which American president are you? Take the quiz and find out. You're Abraham Lincoln. And then your friends share it. I'm Abraham Lincoln. Or the one, this I know a lot of my friends because they think they're smart. They fall for this one. How good is your spelling or your grammar? How many facts do you know? And so you take, because you want to be smart. And by the way, notice, you're always smart. So you take the quiz. You're smart. Share this with your family and friends. And you do, and it goes viral. But what's really going on? Why are all these quizzes on Facebook? Well, turns out the way Facebook permissions work, that the page that creates the quiz, in order, when you take the quiz, boom, they have access to your information. They become your friend. Not just your friend, your friend's friends. Your friends, they are friends with your friends. There's the friends of friends. They get access to your information and everybody you're following. And it turns out there's a company in England named Cambridge Analytica, which makes a specialty of Facebook quizzes. And they have no interest at all in the quiz. They don't. They couldn't care less. They just want everybody on Facebook to take it because they gather information about you that way. And lots of information, not just where you live and who you are, your age and your marital status, but things like your mood, your interests. And they use those. They sell those to political parties, to advertisers. You can buy the most amazing granular ads on Facebook. I want to buy somebody who's a New England Patriots fan, but who lives on the West Coast. And Facebook will sell you those people. You can send, this is actually a useful tip. If you've got a mailing list, if you're a business that has a mailing list and you'd like more people to join your mailing list or use your business, you can give Facebook all the contacts in your mailing list. Facebook matches them to their Facebook accounts and then will give you a new mailing list of people who are very similar but aren't yet on your mailing list. In other words, if somebody cares enough about you to join your mailing list, you'd like more people like that, right? Facebook will provide that to you based on all the stuff they know about people, about the people on your mailing list, people not on your mailing list. And it's, I mean, the fact that Facebook sends out, and it, by the way, Facebook does this, if it thinks you're, you know, a fake account, they'll give you a message that says, we're going to log you out. You've got to send us a photo of yourself which clearly shows your face. When you send us a photo, we'll check it and then permanently delete it from our servers. Oh, what a relief. They're not going to save it. But what are they checking it for? They must, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but they must know what you look like. Even if you aren't a Facebook member or you're a new member, they know what you look like because your friends share pictures of you and tag them. Who knows? Maybe they bought that big database the federal government has that has almost like some 150 million Americans in it. I mean, that must be what they, that must be how that works. How else would you prove that you're you by just sending them a picture of yourself, a clear picture of your face? How else would they know that? They've got, of course, very good face recognition software. We know that. They automatically recognize people in pictures. They recognize you. Even if you're not a member, they recognize you. So just if you're on Facebook, consider what you're sharing on Facebook. And remember that when you take quizzes, when you like pages, when you interact in general on Facebook, you're leaking information. And that there are lots of people, like lots of companies like Cambridge Analytica, that collect that information and use it and sell it. And, you know, okay, you may say, well, big deal, I'm going to get some ads. Well, you're going to get ads that are pretty targeted to you, not merely to where you live and your income and your age and your education level, but they have things called sentiment analysis. Well, you're kind of a sad person. You're a happy person. We're going to make sure the ads target you appropriately. I think that's a little creepy. It's there's nothing we can do about it at this point. People are starting to sit up and notice. There's a professor at NYU, Scott Galloway, has written a book called The Four that talks about Facebook, Amazon, Apple, and Google, and how they've gotten bigger and bigger, and to the point where they really are effectively monopolies, and they misuse their monopoly power, and most importantly, that people are sitting up and taking notice, and these guys better watch out. Farhad Manju, who writes about technology for the New York Times, calls them the Frightful Five. He adds Microsoft to that group. The Frightful Five. They're getting bigger and more powerful. And the thing that more scares me than that is big data. The thing that's really changed in our society is this thing called big data, where they have lots of data points from all sorts of different sources. Every time you go on the internet, lots of information is being collected about your interests, where you go, what you do, how you move your mouse, what kind of browser you have, all sorts of stuff is being collected. Put every search you do, put into a big database, correlated against other databases, and we now have the processing power and the volume of information that all sorts of interesting things are being learned about people. This big data is something new, something we've never seen before, and it's reached, I think, a critical mass to the point where Facebook, who never met you, Facebook would say, yeah, I just want to make sure it's you, Kurt. Send me a picture. And they know. How do they know? That's big data in action right there. And the fact that they do it openly is kind of amazing. We know it's you. We know what you look like. Send us a picture. We want to make sure it's you. What? Now, I use a lot of technology. I live in this. I'm soaking in it. And I love it. And I don't want to give it up. I think technology is wonderful. It's changed our lives in so many positive ways. But we have to be aware of also the consequences. And I think most importantly, the thing I want to do, I've always wanted to do, is help you have the knowledge about this stuff so you can use it appropriately, defend yourself against this if you choose to understand what's really going on. That's what we really do on this show. 8888 Ask Leo. More calls right after this. Oh, Chris Marquardt coming up. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's time to talk photography with Chris Marquardt. He's in charge at discoverthetopfloor.com. You'll find all his great, wonderful workshops there for photographers. And, of course, DiscoverLightroom.com is an amazing Lightroom class. We have to call it the Lightroom Classic training now, because it's the older style Lightroom, not the new style Lightroom. So, Chris, welcome. We talked a couple of weeks ago. We interrupted it with a conversation last week about Lightroom, but a couple of weeks ago we started talking about travel photography. And as you know, Lisa and I, we live for that. For us, vacation means
you love to travel and you love to do photography.
Exactly. So you gave me some great tips last time. Of course, the best tip of all, don't buy a new camera the day before you leave.
Of course. Of course. We have a choice what to talk about here. I could easily make this into a what not to do segment. Maybe let's start with that.
Okay, what not to do.
Again, what not to do when you travel. Don't buy that new camera just a week before the trip. That's a recipe for disaster, because you will be spending more time trying to find stuff in the menus and what button does what. And you won't get the shots you want. And if you are at a very special location, you might not get there anymore in the future. So do not buy that new camera before the trip. Use the camera you love. I would say almost the same for lenses, but they're not as problematic. If you shoot with a new lens, the lenses are easier to handle than new cameras for sure. Believe it or not, same is for tripods. Do not buy a new tripod a week before the trip. Especially if you have, like, if you spend a lot on a tripod, the more expensive ones, especially the ones with very advanced tripod heads that have lots of settings to set up, there's a good chance, and I've seen this in person, that you might actually be trying to secure your camera on the tripod and you don't know what this dial does and that dial does. And I've seen that, and the results were not nice. All these things can result in a lot of, I'd say, drama on a tour when you actually want to relax and you're on vacation, but now you get stressed out because you don't know how that new thing works. So know your gear, shoot with what you know and what you love, because it will also show in your photos. If you're relaxed, if you know what you're doing, then there's a very good chance that the photos will be better than if you're stressed out when taking them. One more thing that I would try to avoid is all sorts of stuff that is in between you and the photo. And that could be stuff like camera armor, for example. there are these rubber coatings that you can get for cameras. And I've seen too many people struggle with them, because then you have a camera that you might know quite well, but you are trying to figure out how to get to that button that is now behind a rubber flap or something. Your cameras aren't really that delicate. You can, I've really mistreated some cameras, and they've been typically fine. And if you travel, it doesn't mean that you will automatically bang that camera around against things. So if you have it with you.
No, I don't do it automatically. I do it on purpose.
that's a different thing. That's a different thing.
No, but it does depend where you're going. I mean, you've gone to some pretty harsh conditions, like up there in Spitsbergen.
No, in Spitsbergen, it's just a bit cold, and that's it. And you do not need to put a warm jacket on your camera. Your camera will be fine.
Yeah.
We've been up in the Himalayas hiking at altitude with the cameras, and of course we had the camera attached to the backpack or around our necks or something. And of course, we wouldn't throw it against rocks and things. You don't do that.
But you have a lens hood on, so that if it hits the lens hood.
Is a good protection. Yeah. So just a few things. Do not change the things that you usually do fundamentally just because you travel. That is almost a guarantee that something will go wrong because of that.
It's like getting a new camera. It's like new workflow.
Change. Do not change the way you shoot. It doesn't really help you. It makes things different and this way more complicated. So that's kind of the basis. Don't change anything. You'll be fine with what you know. If you take good photos back home, there is no reason you won't take good photos when you're on vacation. Now, of course, if you go to the beach and there's lots of salt water spray in the air and stuff, that might warrant a protective filter. If you are in very specific situations and you know, oh my God, the camera is going to get banged against things, then go protect it by all means. But with regular vacations, no, I don't really change anything.
Do you look for sealed cameras or weatherproof cameras? I mean, do you pay attention to that?
No, the one thing that I will have in my pocket and I will have at hand is a microfiber cloth. And not just one of these tiny ones for glasses, but like a kitchen microfiber cloth that you would use to clean dishes with. You buy them in 5 packs for probably $5. And that is the best thing. Take it out of your pocket. Wipe off your camera if it gets wet. Wipe off dirt if it gets dirty. And then shake that cloth out and it'll dry in no time. That's just... And it won't scratch your lenses if you want to use it for... to clean the lens. That's something I always have with me. Even if I'm out in rain, that's how I keep the camera dry, by just wiping it every now and then. So that's kind of the go-to solution there. It's not from a photo store. It's just from a regular grocery store from the household items aisle. So that's cool. And then, of course, when you travel, hey, adjust your gear to what you want to shoot. If you go out for landscapes, bring your tripod, bring your filters, bring your ND filters for long exposures and night skies and things. If you want to shoot people, that's one of the things I love doing in other countries. Try to get and get pictures of the people, the local people. Now, of course, communication can be a bit of a problem there, especially if you don't speak the language. But a bit of a pointing towards a camera, a bit of a nod is typically enough to figure out if they are okay with the picture being taken. Smile lots. That's one of those things that work almost everywhere. Smile a lot and people will smile back. And just in general, if you get to a place where some action, where some action happens, like a festival, for example, I'll be soon in Bhutan. We'll be in areas where there are festivals and people will dance and have fun and stuff. I have seen pictures from people that people took from far away with a long telephoto lens of these things. And I've seen pictures of photographers who put on a wide angle lens and went in to the action as close as possible. And guess which of those two kinds of pictures were the ones that were the strong ones, the good ones, the exciting ones, the close-up ones, of course.
I'm bringing my wide angle next time.
And I've been in Ethiopia in the middle of a religious festival, a procession, people walking down the streets, hundreds of them dancing, and it was kind of intense, of course. But I went right in the middle, and that's some of the best pictures I've ever taken of people because it's so real, it's so close, and it worked.
I just have to get my nerve up. That's all.
Well,
because you know it is a little scary, but get in there, and you know what? You'll have a better experience because you'll be part of. You won't be a distant observer. You'll be part of the scene, which is, I think, very cool.
Chris, we're out of time. No one knows you.
You'll be gone soon. Yeah, right. What can they do? We're gonna have to do part three next week. Okay.
All right.
Because I'm loving these travel tips. You'll find Chris Marquardt at discoverthetopfloor.com, and don't forget discoverlightroom.com is new Lightroom training. Chris, have a great week. I hope you take some fine photographs. Oh, and we'll tell you about the assignment when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. I love Rocket Mortgage. I love talking about Rocket Mortgage because, well, even though I'm not in the market for a new home, I know that next time I get a home loan, it won't be the way I did it the last time when Lisa and I bought our house. We've been there 4 years now. 4 years was a lifetime ago. We got a loan from we went to the big bank, the bank, the one. And we went and we got the loan. And, it was a strange experience because the guy had a calculator on his desk. And he had a sheaf of papers. And he looked through the loan rates on the papers. And he did this amortization on the calculator. He said, well, your monthly payment would be the, and then if you give this much, it was like kind of manual. That should have been a warning sign because the next thing is, we need all this paperwork, bank statements, pay stubs, that kind of thing. And we brought it in and then they asked for more and they asked for more to the point where, 3 weeks later, we were going on vacation. They still were asking for stuff. We went on vacation. We were faxing stuff from vacation. We had to get Lisa's sister, Debbie, who was still in town to find. It was crazy. And it took us so long to get the loan, more than a month, that we almost lost the house. Next time, Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. First of all, much better lender, the best lender in the country. J.D. Power customer satisfaction, number one year after year after year. That means the best. But two, they honor the geeks. They have a loan approval process that you don't go to the bank. You don't go to Quicken Loans. It's all online. You could do it on your phone. You could do it at an open house. And because it's all online, it's fast. You don't have to go through paperwork to, the attic and stuff to find stuff. You give them the basic information. They have trusted partnerships with all the banks and all the financial institutions. So they say, okay, you give us permission to see your bank statement? Yes. Okay. They crunch the numbers. Computers, they're fast. We're not talking months. We're not talking weeks, days, hours even. We're talking minutes, literally. Based on your income and your assets and your credit, they will analyze all the home loan options for which you qualify, tailored to you based on your down payment, your interest rate, your term. You're going to find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage. You want to remember that, okay? Rocket Mortgage. Don't do what we did. Go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Bookmark that if you go to an open house today or who knows? Next week you may say, well, we should refi, right? We should refi. RocketMortgage.com/tech guy, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And by the way, you can go through the whole process and see what you get before you commit. So you'll know, right? That's called Apply Simply, Understand Fully, and Mortgage Confidently. RocketMortgage.com/TechGuy. We thank them for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number if you want to talk high tech. And that could be anything from computers to the internet, home theater, smartphones, photography, digital photography. Not just Chris Marquardt. I'm a fan, too. We could talk about that. And, of course, I have the iPhone 10. You know what else I got? Friday was a big day for me. The UPS guy came loaded for bear. Not only did I get a new iPhone 10, which I can't stop playing with. I am very pleased with so far. Don't know about battery life. That takes a couple of days to really suss out. But so far, very good. I also got the new Apple TV, the new 4K version of the Apple TV. Pretty happy with that. Looks beautiful on my, there's no point in getting it unless you have a 4K TV. Even better if you have an HDR TV, it supports HDR and it looks gorgeous. Oh, and you know what? Apple did a nice thing that I don't think anybody else is doing. If you bought movies or TV shows on iTunes, of course they show up on your Apple TV. If there are 4K versions, they'll automatically be upgraded. You don't have to pay more to get a 4K version. If there's an HDR 4K version, they'll automatically be upgraded. So I went back through some movies. A Deadpool HDR 4K looks gorgeous. Found a number of movies. Not all of them. Some older movies, there's no 4K version. But the ones that they had, they basically gave it away, which is really nice. Then I got something from Google on Friday. I got my new Google Chromebook, the Pixel Book, and the Pencil. Now, this is another example of something that really is too expensive. Chromebooks should be inexpensive, right? I don't mean $200. They make them, but that's kind of those are kind of cheesy, chintzy Chromebooks. They fall apart. You save money by using low-quality components. So they're not the best screens. They're not the fastest. The trackpads aren't great. The keyboards aren't great. There are some very nice Chromebooks. Samsung makes a couple, the Chromebook Pro and the Chromebook Plus, that are about $500. HP, Acer, Asus, all make $500 aluminum body. Really nice. But Google likes to, I think what they're trying to do is say, look, just because it's a Chrome OS laptop doesn't mean it shouldn't be as nice as any Windows or Mac laptop. But in order to make a laptop like that, they have to charge you. The least expensive one, which is the one I got, is $999. It's $1,000 for a Chromebook. But it is nice. It is very nice. Beautiful touch screen. The pen works nicely with it. That's, by the way, an additional $100. The trackpad's very smooth. It's got a nice soft touch panel. If you like Chromebooks, and I know many of you do, I'm a big fan, especially for school and business, places where you don't need a full general-purpose computer. For most people, if you spend your life in the browser for banking, for surfing, even for email, then a Chromebook would be a great choice for you. It's much more secure, much more reliable. You probably should get the Samsung Chromebook Plus, to be honest. But if you have $500 extra to spend. Now, remember, I buy these because this is my job. I'm not sure I would spend this money if I didn't have to review this for you. But it is beautiful. It really is nice. They did a very nice, great keyboard. It's a pleasure to use. The only bad thing, well, first of all, it's Type-C ports, one on each side. You could charge or you can use it as a USB port, but you have to get adapters and dongles and things. It does have a headphone microphone jack, standard mini jack, so that's nice. But that's it. No other ports. The other bad thing, the screen has a fairly large bezel. We're in the new era, you know, of no frames on our screen. Not just on phones, but on laptop computers, too. Most laptops now have very narrow bezels. They look great. I love them. Been very happy with them. Things like the Dell XPS 13 and 15. They call it the infinity display because there's no edge. Not the Google Pixel Book. That's got a big half-inch frame, black frame all the way around it. They said they had to do that for the Wacom digitizing tablet that's built into that screen so you can use the pen. I find that hard to believe since most phones, which also have digitizers, can go all the way to the edge. But if that's, you know, that's the best they could do, okay. But if you're willing to spend a little more, a lot more, twice as much, for a Chromebook. This is the best. There's no question about that. I wouldn't get, there's a one you can beef it up with a Intel i7 processor and 16 gigs of RAM and a big 512 gig hard drive. You can really beef it up. And then it's $1,650. $1,650. Wouldn't recommend that. But the $1,000 version, plenty fast. Runs Android apps beautifully. Really very nice piece of hardware. Nice piece of kit, as my British friends would say. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones. Howard, Mission Viejo, California. Hi, Howard.
Hey, Leo. Love the show.
Thank you for hanging on.
Oh, thank you, thank you. I'm going to buy an iPhone 10 from the Verizon store. I'm sorry, from the Apple store.
Yeah.
And Verizon's my carrier.
Yeah.
And is there only one model radio for Verizon iPhone 10?
Yeah, you'll want, first of all, you have to get it. They're not selling an unlocked version yet of the iPhone 10. Apple's done that before. They may in a few months. But right now, you have to get it for Verizon, Sprint, AT&T, or T-Mobile. And get it for the carrier that you're using. Actually, the Verizon is the best one to get. It has all the radios.
Oh,
so
okay.
You're in luck, actually. Get the Verizon one. You won't really want to get T-Mobile or AT&T. It won't work fully on the Verizon network. But the Verizon network will work on other networks. And Verizon, because they had to make an agreement with the FCC, does not lock the SIM slot on that. So you can put an LTE. There is a SIM slot on the iPhone 10. They use an eSIM, but you could put a SIM from another carrier in there. It's unlocked. So the eSIM,
you said you have to buy it locked, but eventually they'll unlock it?
They're all locked now. Okay. Apple will sell an unlocked version down the road, but you're at the mercy of your carrier as far as unlocking down the road. I don't know what Verizon's policies are. AT&T, for instance, if you're in good standing, the phone is fully paid for, they'll unlock it if you ask them. But I don't know.
Okay, so that's something different then, because you used to could buy an unlocked phone.
Yeah, Apple's gone back and forth on this. There have been iPhone releases where there was no unlocked phone. I think the original, I want to say the 6S, didn't have an unlocked one. And then 6 months down the road, they started selling an unlocked one. I suspect they'll do the same. So right now, though, if you're buying an iPhone 10, you're going to buy it for a carrier. It's going to be locked.
Okay.
But
in time.
But Verizon's weird because they're not allowed to lock the SIM card chip. So you can, so it's actually really it's not locked on the Verizon one in effect.
Okay, cuz I don't have a contract with them, you know.
So the FCC, they had a consent decree. FCC went after him. I can't remember what it was for, but they agreed we will not lock the LTE SIM card in our phones. So a Verizon phone is essentially unlocked. This eSIM thing complicates it. You know, when I activated my phone, mine was on T-Mobile. You don't put a SIM in it. You call T-Mobile and they activate it because there's a SIM, a chip that basically simulates a SIM. It's a SIM. And that, I don't know how that might complicate the Verizon deal. So that's an interesting question.
Okay.
That's an interesting question. But if there is an unlocked iPhone, it would be the Verizon unlocked iPhone.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Well, I'm coming from an iPhone 4, and I just about got my money's worth out of that. So.
Brother, you're going to get your money's worth out of this one. This is a wonderful phone. I think it's a great phone, and I think it's time to upgrade.
Yeah. Because after this one, after the 10, my next one will probably be a 20.
Yeah. Based on past experience, yeah,
right, absolutely.
That's good. You wring every bit of juice out of that thing. That's good because it's an expensive phone. You need to.
Right. Thank you, Leo.
My pleasure. Enjoy it. I think you're going to love it. I don't know what the stock situation is right now in Verizon stores. I don't know if you can walk in and get one. If you order online, it's going to take you 6 weeks. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and iPhone 10 and iPhone 8, 7654. I won't go past the 4. 8888 Ask Leo, smartwatches, augmented reality, 888-827-5536. Anything with a chip in it, I would like to talk to you about it. Give us a ring. We're getting some great information here, answering some questions, having fun. And, of course, if you wish, you can also join us in the chat room. We have a chat room. We also have a live video feed if you like to see behind the scenes, that kind of thing. All of that's available at our website, techguylabs.com. That's free. No sign up. Don't take your email address. You can leave comments there. Everything I talk about is linked there. Audio and video from the show after the fact, techguylabs.com. Terrell is in White House, Tennessee. Hello, Terrell.
Yeah, it's Terrell, actually.
Terrell,
how are you doing?
I'm very well. What? How are you?
Good. Doing great. So I wanted to talk to you about a battery pack. I'm totally blind, and I want to talk to you about a battery pack that I had heard about but had never seen until Friday. One of my friends who listens to your show quite a bit showed it to me. But it's a gentleman by the name of Brent Harbolt, and he's the Harbolt Company is his company. And he sells this battery. It's a 15,000 milliamp battery. But what's unique about it is there's a button on top of it, and it will beep. And for every beep, that symbolizes 25 percentage points.
Oh, that's great.
Of charge.
So it's an accessible battery pack so that if you can't see the lights, you can at least hear the beep.
Right, and it vibrates too, and you can put it into vibration mode. It's got two USB-C ports and then a micro USB port in the middle for charging the pack.
I love that idea. H-A-R-B-O-L-T.
And HarboltCompany.com is Harbolt the website.
HarboltCompany.com, specializing in, it says computer and electronics at a great price, but that's nice that they also make accessible stuff. That's really great.
Well, the owner is actually blind as well.
Perfect.
And it's like $89, but honestly, I mean, I ordered one Friday, and for $89, it's not, you know, I'm willing to pay that price for
just
that.
Just so you can use it. I mean, otherwise you're guessing how much battery's been used.
Well, you know, and it's kind of funny because the American Council of Blind, who I'm a member of, they have a pack. It's 11,000 milliamps, but it doesn't talk. It doesn't beep. It's kind of funny, actually.
Yeah, anybody can make a battery pack that doesn't have any accessibility features.
Right.
This is fantastic.
And, you know, and that's the thing is that I've been hesitant to buy one because of, you know, I don't know if it will automatically shut off. I mean, this one.
But you feel like it's good. It does the job. You know what I love? It has the USB ports, you might have mentioned this, are reversible, which means you don't have to get it in right the first time. It'll work either direction. I love that.
Right. Yeah. It's really neat. So, you know, if just to play with or whatever, maybe you can order one or something like that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take your word for it.
You know,
one of the problems, of course, I have reviewing accessibility stuff, especially for people with vision impairments, is I don't get the same experience. So I rely on you and other listeners, and we have quite a few blind listeners, to help me and tell me what works. And in fact, yesterday we had somebody call and talk about accessibility on the iPhone 10, and he was very impressed. He's an Android user, but he tried it. He was very impressed with how easy it was to get the iPhone 10, even though it doesn't have a home button anymore.
I still have my 6 because of the headphone jack.
That's a big one for me, too. I agree. Yeah.
You know, and I hope that the 6 models will be around for a while.
Apple continues to sell 6S, 7, 8, and the 10. They have now, plus the SE, which is essentially a 5S. So they have quite a few models out there, and I agree with you. I will be very sad when the last of the headphone jack models come out. I don't understand why Apple did that. There's no compelling reason. They claim they need the space, but look at the Galaxy S8. It's got a headphone jack. It's got all the capabilities of the iPhone, including it's waterproof, and it still has a headphone. So I don't understand why Apple is so constrained. Why Apple can Samsung do it, but you can't? I don't understand that.
Right. Now, you mentioned something yesterday on your show, and I wasn't quite clear on another topic, but you mentioned a service called Spreaker.
Yes.
What exactly is that?
Spreaker. And a friend of mine, Rob Greenlee, works there. I've known Rob forever. He was an original podcaster, went to work for Microsoft, helped them get their podcast products together. Now he works over at Spreaker. And it is a service that lets you make a podcast. You can record your podcasts using the Spreaker app. You can listen to podcasts, and Spreaker helps podcast creators distribute them and monetize them. So it's kind of an all-in-one platform. It isn't free. You pay, although they have a free – actually, they do have a free tier that gives you 15 minutes of broadcast and 5 hours of audio storage, 15 minutes a day. But it, most people who are podcasters will end up spending six or 20 or even more dollars a month for their full-featured solutions. I think it's one of many platforms like this, but I know Rob well, and I like him. I like the Spreaker guys. So this is one of many choices. If you wanted a podcast, this makes it very easy to start your own podcast and do it with I don't think you even need – I think you can do it with your phone. You don't even need a special microphone or anything. Just do a podcast with your smartphone. Really nice solution. Hey, Terrell, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. It was very nice to talk to you. Moving on to Omar in La Mirada, California. Hello, Omar.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. I had a question. We own our a business that's open 24 hours, and we have, I don't know, 40, 50 lines.
Wow.
Different phone numbers that come in.
Holy cow.
And we had a problem with a crank caller. And he's been doing this for the last 2 years. We've called the police, called the phone company. We don't use a traditional phone company, like, you know, Verizon.
Use a digital service, probably.
Yeah, I think it's called Telepacific.
That's funny. We use Telepacific for this call is on a Telepacific line. How funny. They're fiber optic. They're really interesting what they're doing. They can't block that caller?
The thing is he's spoofing his number. Yeah. And the way he's doing it is baffles me because I mean, the second you hang up, he calls right back.
Oh, I'm
same
so sorry.
Type of area code.
Just yeah.
The last four digits are different,
yep.
And it's immediate.
We call that neighbor spoofing, and lots of telemarketers are doing it. It's illegal. Good luck catching him. It is illegal what he's doing. He's spoofing the area code in exchange of your phone, which means you're a business, so you're going to answer the phone anyway, but it works with individuals. And this is, unfortunately, the internet has made harassment easier than ever.
Oh, and what he's doing is, I mean, it's not just calling. He's calling you and he's
I'm so sorry.
Recording you and he's playing movies.
Just obnoxious. You're going to have to work with.
He plays back.
Yeah, I understand. Believe me, I know about all of this stuff because I get it too. You're going to have to work with your carrier. The only people who can block it is your carrier. But the problem is it's really easy to spoof phone numbers. They're meaningless. The caller ID is meaningless now. Maybe Telepacific has a better way to do it. I would ask them. They're the only people who can help at this point. Incredibly frustrating. The problem is it's just harassment is so easy now. Anybody who's just slightly inclined, often it's a kid or somebody with, you know, mental issues. Sounds like this person is just really, why is he, do you know why he's so angry at you?
No, you know what? I think, somebody was saying that there's a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Where.
And it's a kid probably. Anybody can do this. It's easy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we used to play around and spoof people.
I know. Yeah, you'd call them up, say, is your refrigerator running? Well, you better go catch it. This is, the internet technology's made it a fine art now.
But now they're taking it way out of control. I mean,
agree.
Affecting your business.
I agree.
There's somebody on YouTube that's doing it, and people are putting, I guess giving him the number. To who to spoof, and he's recording it and playing it on YouTube, and people are, finding it amusing.
Well, now you can do something about that. You can complain to YouTube, and they will pull his channel down. So that is one thing you certainly should do. If you know who this is, or you know this YouTube channel, you can go to that channel and report him. And if he's breaking the law, which he is, YouTube will pull that channel down. The sad thing is, it's not hard to create another one.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, yeah, I didn't even.
That's for sure something you should pursue. And then it may be, and I don't know enough about how phone systems work. It may be that there is a better identifier than the caller ID. It may be there's some sort of invisible secret.
They were saying like a trap on the line. And I called Telepacific. They told me to get a police report.
That's the problem, is that the police, you might get a local police officer to help you. You won't get the feds involved, even though it's a crime.
And I mean, I can show them probably in the last 2 years, 3,000 phone calls from the
Fed. But until somebody, you'll have to ask the police what the rules are in your jurisdiction.
I mean, there's a misdemeanor code in California for menacing and annoying.
Well,
phone
that's
calls.
The problem is that it generally they want you to be in fear of your life or your limb or property damage. And unless you if this person is smart, which they sound like they are smartish, they will never threaten you, because that does trigger law enforcement.
I don't even know what his voice sounds like.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think if I knew his voice, if I heard him or any one of us heard him, my brothers, we would know who he is.
It's a small town.
It's not even about I think it's one of our friends, and he's taken it way out of control. And so every time he calls, he either plays back your own voice, like the way you answered the phone a year ago, 2 years ago.
Wow. I don't think it's
you. He has all these reports.
I doubt it's somebody you know, but maybe it is. But this is just – and by the way, the more energy they get from you, the more it annoys you, the more they will do it.
The more they keep going.
Yep.
You know what? That's true, because
they feed off negative energy. We have a name for this in the internet world. They're called trolls, and they feed off negative energy. So the best thing to do generally
is drive you crazy.
They're trying to drive you crazy. It's the best thing to do is ignore them. I understand it is driving you crazy, but don't let them know
that. I ignored him Friday, and he only called once.
Yeah. They need the energy. They get the energy from your upset.
Man.
It's terrible. Right, well, and the internet has made this possible, and law enforcement is very slow to help, if at all.
Yeah, they didn't even want to give me a file number. No. I was like, dude, Telepacific's not going to help me without a file number.
Until they threaten you, they can put a trap on it. They can't do anything legally. It's really a mess. You have my deepest sympathy. I have experienced very similar harassment. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. I don't like to talk about it too much. We were talking before the break with Omar from La Mirada, who is being harassed, prank callers. But, you know, when we were kids, you'd call up and you'd say, hey, you got Prince Albert in a can? Yes, we do. Well, you better let him out and hang up. And then, you know, later generations perfected that and got a little more rude, a little more obnoxious. But, man, it is out of control these days. And it's not just telephones. It's over social networks. It's over the internet. Because the tools to do this are widely available. They're free or cheap, mostly free. The information's out there. There are YouTube channels on how to do this. Now, what I did tell Omar is you can get that YouTube channel pulled down. Just go to Google. They'll pull that down if they're advocating any kind of illegal activity. But it's hard to get law enforcement involved because it's a prank. And until you're, you know, there's a threat, they're probably just going to say, well, I'm sorry that's happening, but we've got more important things to do. And they do. Sure is disruptive to your business, I understand. It's disruptive to your emotional health. It's something we see all the time now. Trolling is an epidemic on the internet. It's happening on Twitter. It's happening on your phone lines, the robocalls. I don't know what the answer is to it. It's just a mess. I don't know. I don't have a solution. I wish I did. Except that, you know, one of the reasons I don't like to talk about it is because it encourages it when you talk about it. If they know they're getting to you, that's what these kids get off on. They get off on the negative energy, and that's why we call them trolls. They're like the trolls. You know, they live under the bridge, and they get off on upsetting people. Trolling is something that's been around as long as there's been the internet, but it's gotten much more effective thanks to technology. And the best best advice I can give you is just ignore it. hope you'll find a new victim and move on. Certainly, the less satisfaction he gets out of you, the less likely to spend time. Tom on the line from Riverside, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, what can I do for you?
I have an eighth grade granddaughter who is interested in photo and video editing. We're looking at Photoshop Elements and Premiere. Is that the way to go to get started?
It's certainly an excellent choice. Photoshop Elements is almost everything that's in Photoshop, but with a nice, easy-to-use user interface, and it's under $100, because the real Photoshop's a lot more expensive than that. So, yeah, I think Photoshop Elements is good. Is she taking her own pictures?
She is, yes.
And she does it on a camera phone or with a camera, or what's she using?
She's looking at a Canon EOS Rebel T6.
Beautiful choice. Highly recommend that choice. So that'll take digital photos, and then she'll import them into her computer. What is it, a Mac or a PC?
It's going to be a PC, and that's what I was curious about. The system requirements are very modest for this program, but I'm not sure that'd be enough computer to do the job. What does it take?
No, it doesn't take much. It doesn't take much. Processor's irrelevant. I mean, worst case, she has to wait a little longer, but she's a kid. She's got lots of time. You know, I mean seconds longer. I don't mean days. I mean seconds longer. It's not a big deal. It might be a little slow compared to the top of the line. Memory is probably the most important thing. Get 8 gigs of RAM at least. Storage, of course, if she's going to put a lot of photos on there, she'll start to use up the hard drive. But you can always get external hard drives, move stuff around. I'll tell you another program I would look at that is a little easier to use, a little bit easier on the budget, from a company called MacFun, P-H-U-N. They call it Luminar. And I actually think this might be a better choice for her. It's Windows and Mac than Photoshop Elements, because it has some fairly hefty capabilities built in. MacFun is going after Adobe, and I'll tell you why. Adobe's moving to a subscription model. They don't want people to be able to buy outright software. They want you to pay a monthly fee. Photoshop Elements is the last holdout on this, by the way. So, but Luminar realizes, hey, this is an opportunity for us. So MacFun, MacFun.com. The program is called Luminar, L-U-M-I-N-A-R, and it is a fantastic photo editing program that has all the kinds of tools. You know, I would have recommended, frankly, Lightroom, which is what most photographers use for post-processing, but they've moved to a subscription model, and it's $10 a month, and at some point it just starts to really add up. So Luminar, which I think is $69, is a very nice choice. It does support all the Adobe Photoshop and Lightroom plugins, so you're not gonna miss out. And I think she'll like it. She's probably coming from Instagram, where she's used to filters. That's usually how kids start now. They start doing Instagram pictures. They apply filters. They go, wow, this is great. So they have that similar kind of filter-based interface. But as you get more proficient, and she will, she'll be able to find underlying the filters all the sliders and tools and layers and channels that make a big difference. So I would highly recommend Luminar. It has a great little tool now, the Super Heal tool, will come out in the 2018 version that lets you eliminate people from your pictures.
Now, Leo, does it make sense we're going to get her a new laptop? Should we get something with a video card and dedicated video?
Nope. Not unless she's a gamer.
Okay, perfect.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I think that this is actually my new favorite tool. There are other companies, too, that see an opportunity in what Adobe's done. Adobe has really annoyed a lot of professionals. A lot of professionals are looking elsewhere. Serif, which makes a very nice program, another one to look at, called Affinity Photo on an iPad program, but they also make PC and Mac tools. They're also going after now, all of a sudden, Adobe, because they see an opportunity in the marketplace. That's good. The competition is very good. Adobe's owned this for far too long. They've been complacent for far too long. And now they're getting greedy, in my opinion. So here's an opportunity to to support a small company. They're out of Ukraine, MacFun. I think they're going to change their name, too, because it's not now that they have Windows products as well as Mac products. Somebody in the chat room is making an excellent point. If you, sort of an excellent point. You should use Photoshop if you're learning how to do editing because that's what you're going to use professionally. Yeah, but maybe not, you know, so she's what? She'd be in the workplace in no less than 6 to 8 years, right, after college. You think Photoshop will be the thing in 6 to 8 years? I don't think so. And the skills you learn, and once you understand color channels, layers, histograms, those skills translate very well. I don't think it matters at all at this point, especially if you're just starting out, if you learn Photoshop. Get a less expensive program that has great capabilities and a modern user interface. Photoshop really isn't the premier tool for photo editing anyway. Most professionals use Lightroom and then Photoshop if they need it. And I think the Lightroom interface is antiquated. Adobe thinks so. They've completely rewritten it. MACPHUN.com, Luminar. That's my new favorite. I'm thinking of moving over to it myself. And I own all the Adobe stuff. 8888-ASK-LEO. Disagree? Give me a ring or visit our website, TechGuyLabs.com, and leave a comment. I'm drinking, by the way, did I tell you I'm drinking what I'm drinking? I am drinking a very nice Three Africas. This is part of my Blue Bottle subscription. Our show today brought to you by Blue Bottle Coffee. Days are getting shorter. Weather's getting a little chill. Nothing compliments a brisk autumn day quite like a delicious cup of coffee. But I'm not talking about any old coffee. I'm talking about the best coffee you've ever had. Gourmet coffee. Coffee so delicious, so flavorful. You'll say, why was I drinking that bad stuff for so long? We're talking Blue Bottle coffee. Blue Bottle's transformed the coffee scene in our area. And now they're going around the world to get great coffees, both single source. So this is the Costa Rica. I love this one, by the way. Chirapó Regulo de Rivas. It's the Ureña family in Costa Rica, Rivas, Costa Rica, that grows these beans. What's great about Blue Bottle is they roast them. Now, this one we got a couple of weeks ago, so ignore the date. When you get your Blue Bottle coffee, it'll have been roasted within 48 hours of its delivery. They roast within 48 hours and ship them straight to you. I'm drinking right now. Oh, this is an amazing coffee, the Three Africas. This is a blend of three different African beans. And by the way, I love it because they give you a card in the box that tells you all about the coffee, about its origin. Oh, man. Oh, I wish you could smell that. This is an amazing, amazing coffee. The thing is, you want fresh coffee. You go to the store and buy coffee. That coffee could have been roasted weeks or months ago. Blue Bottle has something for everyone's taste buds. This is a lighter kind of fruity flavor, the Three Africas. I also like this. This is another blend. They do a lot of single origin and some blends, too. This is Giant Steps. It's Ugandan and Sumatran. It says, if this coffee were any heavier bodied, you could pour it on pancakes. Viscous, fudgy, substantial. So you got your choices. And what you're going to find is you're going to find some delicious coffee that you love, and then you just order that, and you're going to say, I have found my coffee. Blue Bottle, without question, the freshest, most delicious coffee you have ever had. I love it. I eat it straight out of the bag. I do. It's delicious. Hurry. BlueBottleCoffee.com/TechGuy for $10 off your first coffee subscription order. Yeah, they deliver it twice a month, so it's fresh. And while you're there, check out their digital holiday store. There's no better gift than a sampler of Blue Bottle Coffee to your family and friends. They're going to love it. Blue Bottle, it's a San Francisco favorite, and we know coffee. BlueBottleCoffee.com/TechGuy. Get $10 off your first order. We thank Blue Bottle for powering this show. I'm drinking the Three Africas today. It's so good. And for supporting the Tech Guy podcast. BlueBottleCoffee.com/TechGuy. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Let's go to Cheektowaga, New York, and Joe. He's on the line. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Unfortunately, I have a kind of sad story for you.
Oh, dear.
Well, my Nexus 7, it was seemed to be running slow, so I rebooted it, figuring there was some process there in the background, chewing CPU and all that. And instead of my custom boot animation, the default boot animation comes up, and I go, oh, no.
Well, wait a minute, but the tablet still works, right? It's just that the boot animation's changed.
Oh, no. It never finished booting.
That's not a good sign.
So, yeah, you know, I go into fast boot mode, and I said, well, let's flash the factory firmware. Well, it took 10 minutes to download / system, and it took 2 hours before I figured out it never finished. So I think the flash is shot on it.
It may be. I mean, it's, you know, by the way, I love this tablet. I have a Nexus. I bought the first Nexus 7. This is the second generation. But it is, what, now 4 or 5 years old?
Yeah, this is the first generation, 2012.
Yeah, 7-inch tablet. And I use it, actually, I use it every day on the radio show, and I hope to God it doesn't die on me, because I love this thing. But Google stopped making them, of course.
So I'm kind of in the market for a new tablet. I was kind of looking at the Lenovo Tab 4 8, which is an 8-inch tablet. But yeah.
I wonder, is anybody making a 7-inch anymore?
Actually, Lenovo does, but it looks like a cheaper 7-inch tablet. And I don't know. I'm looking in like maybe $130 range. If you had any, I was looking at that. And the Asus ZenPad.
I love the Asus. Over the Lenovo, I would pick that. I don't know if Samsung. I mean, Samsung's kind of the last man standing in terms of high-end Android tablets. You know, this is a dying category. Even Google doesn't make one anymore. I mean, it's. I don't know why. I guess because the phones have gotten big enough, nobody's buying the tablets.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Everybody's buying phablets these days.
Yeah, phablets. That's what we call them, phone tablets. And when you can get a phablet that's 6 inches, what do you need a 7-inch tablet for anymore, right?
So you find many problems with the Lenovo products, though?
I use the Lenovo high-end products all the time, the ThinkPads. But I have not had great experiences with the low-end stuff. But I got to tell you, any tablet you buy for under $200, even this Nexus 7 was more than $200. Not much more. But anything you buy under $200, you're taking a little bit of a chance with. I mean, that is such a low cost, they're going to have to cut corners in all sorts of ways.
Just not in the budget for much more.
I completely understand. I'm not against Lenovo, no. I think they're fine. I don't have anything but anecdotal reports one way or the other. I know I like Asus as a company. I like their hardware, and I like their low-end hardware a little better than the low-end Lenovo hardware, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
So,
well, thank you for your advice.
Yeah, if you have the choice, the Asus seems to do what you want. If you can go to a Best Buy or somewhere that sells them, play with it a little bit. The real thing that they give up at that price point is the screen. You're just not going to get a great looking screen. Now, that may not bother you. That's why I want you to, if you can find it, try it, look at it in the store. If they'd let you take it out in the daylight, that'd be nice. But take a look at that screen, touch it, see if it's responsive enough for you. Cause that's the first thing that goes when they cut the price to that point, they're going to get kind of low end screens. The rest of the stuff is probably very similar. The processors, the RAM, and all that stuff. Anybody has some experience with inexpensive Android tablets, let me know. You really do want to make sure, one thing you want to make sure, one problem, of course, Google wasn't updating the Nexus 7 anymore. You want to make sure if you get anything with Android that it is being updated currently. Doesn't mean it has to be Oreo, the latest version of Android, but it should be at least Nougat, Android 7. And the most important thing is go into the About section and look at what security patch level you have. Because Google now does monthly security patches, and those are very, very important. They fix a lot of flaws, like the latest crack flaw, which is a serious flaw. Now I'm looking at my Nexus 7. It's running Android 6. Too old, and its last security patch was August of last year. So it is, I would probably not want to take this tablet on the internet. I don't use it that way. I use it, it's actually a clock. basically, that times the radio segments so I know when I need to break and so forth. It's a little custom program I wrote, and that works great, and the screen looks great, but if Google's not keeping it up to date, that's bad. So check, make sure the Asus comes with at least Nougat Android 7, or the Lenovo comes at least with Android 7. A lot of these cheap tablets won't. And you want to, gosh, you hope that it'll have the latest security patch. The crack patch is, I believe, coming out soon, the November patch. The problem is these inexpensive tablets, there's no incentive for them to upgrade them. And that's a problem, frankly. Joe. Thank you, Joe. Now John in Eastern Long Island. Hi, John.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Question for you. I had an iPhone 6 Plus that developed touchscreen disease. App placed it for $350. And about another 8 months after that, their replacement failed on me. I did back it up to my laptop with the manual, you know, manually backed it up. And then I got an 8 Plus in the interim. I just wanted to get the 6 and use it to fly my DJI Mavic Pro drone. So it was going to be a very expensive navigational screen.
Yes.
When I went to go restore the software from my laptop, I discovered that it was pulling the applications from the App Store.
Yes.
And they had a version on the App Store I wasn't crazy about. A lot of people had reported it was crashing drones and you get flyaways.
Well, you'll get updates. In fact, DJI has just updated the DJI Go 4, I think it's called, app. So you will get updates. The theory on the restore is not, and that's why it's pulling it from the internet. It doesn't restore to the same version you had on the previous device. It just says, oh, you had the DJI software on here, so let's go out and get the newest one. So you should get not a restore of the old version, but the new version. And if you
wanted the old version because it was also not as heavily geofenced. I'm also a commercial pilot.
Yeah, the geofencing is in response, of course, to irresponsible drone use by others.
So many. You can just turn on YouTube.
Yeah, if you're a pilot, you know what a problem this is.
Right. But then I've got to go through the Part 107 and the hassle unlocking every time you want to do something spur of the moment. It's very time-consuming, and then your shot is lost.
Yep.
I keep my drone with me all the time. So the beauty of having the older, less geofence software.
I see. So you want an older version, not the new version.
I have my iPhone 6 Plus that I've now since have had given back, and Apple replaced it. They upgraded me to a 6S Plus.
Yep.
Apparently, you can't just get a 6 Plus any longer.
Right.
So I also did. I was told, and I said, okay, that sounds plausible, that if you do an encrypted backup to your laptop.
No, it doesn't back up the old versions, just the passwords and data.
Darn.
You still get the new version. Let me think about this, because it may be, in fact, DJI won't offer it because they don't want to, because they feel like that geofencing is very important to keep people from using drones near airports and other public places where it would be a big hazard. Let me see where we can figure this out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I don't think you can. I think that Apple prevents you from doing that actively.
To your left.
No, it doesn't back up the old.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I think Apple actively prevents that. I think you're out of luck that you cannot go back to an older version of the software.
That's too bad. The other workaround, now that I have the 6 Plus S, is there any way to activate it without a SIM card, or do I have to take...
No, you don't need to activate it. I mean, if you want LTE, you're going to have to buy somebody's LTE.
I've got the 6S Plus here, and it won't let me get anywhere near through to activate the phone without a SIM card. It seems like that's what they're doing these days. That in order to even restore it from iTunes, you have to have a SIM card in it.
Oh, it didn't used to be that way. Maybe they have changed that policy. It used to be you could use it as a Wi-Fi device, like a basically like a touch.
Right. Well, that's what I had done with my 6. I'd taken the SIM card out, and it just says no SIM card, but everything worked status quo.
Yeah.
without LTE.
Oh, that's interesting. I did not, I do not know that, so I'm going to have to check that. That I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you know, Apple being Apple, this may be a concession to the carriers. They may say, well, you can't sell this iPhone without a SIM. So what you could do, Synapse is saying, and I think this would work, is put your SIM in, activate it, and then take it out. So right. take the SIM from your working phone, activate the phone that you don't care about, pop the SIM, and it should still be activated.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good thing. And then they're saying in the chat room, you can apply to DJI to remove the geofencing.
Yes.
You knew that.
I'm consuming, and as a photographer, that if you see something interesting in the moment,
yeah.
By the time you've gone and jumped, the shot's lost.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thanks so much.
Which DJI are you using?
The Mavic Pro drone. I'm not sure what the actual software is.
Yeah, I just got the Mavic Pro myself. I love it. What a nice drone! And it's so portable.
Yes, and affordable too, considering the you get from it.
Yeah, I mean it's not the best camera out there. It's not as good as the, Pro version, but boy, it's nice. I really like the Mavic.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun.
Good. Well, I'm sorry I don't have better news for you.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Leo.
Sure, John.
You got out of the gate, I'm sure.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Bye.
8888 Ask Leo the number. Last segment though, we're going to wrap it up in a little bit. Let's start with Carlos in San Vicente, California. Hi, Carlos.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Carlos.
First of all, thank you so much for what you do.
My pleasure. I'm lucky to get to do this. Are you kidding? I don't tell this radio station, but I probably pay to do this.
Hey, Leo, I got two quick questions for you. I was at a convention in Las Vegas about 3 weeks ago, and I ran across a booth where they were advertising the first behavioral biometric password that they claim is unhackable. Because it's based on your handwriting. They have a website, and it's biosig-id.com. And I wanted to know if you've heard about this or what your thoughts were.
Well, certainly behavioral biometrics is nothing new. Google's an expert in this. They say they can tell who you are with your Android phone, for instance, by things like gait analysis. You have a unique walk, and when they tie that to how you touch the phone and how you use it, they can pinpoint exactly who you are. In fact, you may have noticed these days, instead of having to type in weird letters to do the CAPTCHA, I say I'm not a robot, many pages, right. You just have a checkbox that says I'm not a robot, and that's all you have to do. And the reason is, it says, hey, Google, is this guy who he says he is? And Google says, yeah, he is. They don't need you to do anything more. Now, I would question how effective something can be just on one factor like handwriting. That's a start. But even fingerprints, we know, there's a false positive one every 50,000 people. So I'm not convinced that handwriting would be sufficient. What Google's doing is multi-factors. And
okay. So
the idea, though, of behavioral biometrics is absolutely sound. It probably is the future of security. Really, all of this is with one goal in mind. How do you prove you are who you say you are? And in the past, a driver's license was enough. And then, of course, a password, but that's not perfect because people can guess or steal passwords. So we added fingerprints and face ID and, other measurements. Google thinks it's got this all solved because just how you use your computer, how you use your phone, how you carry it, all of those things are unique. And so at some point, I expect to see behavioral biometrics widely used. The problem with a signature, it is interesting, but the problem with a signature system is, as like DocuSign, you got to get everybody to adopt it. You have to get the banks to agree, the real estate companies, you have to get everybody to agree that, yeah, this is a good system. So, this company's made a start, obviously. I'm not familiar with them, but...
Yeah, what I found most interesting was they claim that because it's based on your handwriting, no one can reproduce it. So they have it their website. They say that if you can reproduce one of our passwords, which is a four-block password, you can even let other people see your password. They'd pay $500. Well, $500 is not a whole lot, but anyway.
It reminds me of the LifeLock CEO who gave out his social security number and said, hack me, and got hacked a lot. $500, it's an interesting idea. Biosig-ID.com. It has one advantage, which is we've been using our signatures to identify ourselves, which is a terrible way to do that. Otherwise, there wouldn't be anything like called check forging. But if they've got a better system, banks would adopt it because it'd be just like signing your name, right? So I think that the real trick with all of this stuff is to get people to use it. And I don't mean you and me, end users. I mean institutions. Until a bank agrees this is a better way to do it, it doesn't really matter that they've got it. It's a great idea. It's a great idea. And I'm sure that that's their goal now is that's why they're going to these, trade shows. They've got to get the financial institutions to get behind it. A company like Google is going to have a little bit of probably a head start in this kind of stuff just because they're Google. But good luck, biosig-id.com. I think it's a great, because it's just like signing your name, it's something that would easily apply to the kinds of things like writing a check that we're already doing. Actually, though, does anybody write checks anymore? I don't. Anybody? Let's say hello to Todd in Heisberg Heights, New Jersey. Am I saying that right? Heisberg Heights?
Heisberg Heights, not too far from your old town in Leonia.
Leonia. Nice. What can I do for you?
So I got up early a couple of Fridays ago, ordered the new iPhone X, and I got it a couple of days ago.
What do you think?
Well, so far so good. It's definitely, it surprised me how small it was compared to the 7S Plus.
Yeah, because they don't have to have a frame or bezels. The screen is bigger, but the size of the phone is smaller. I like the size. Do you like it?
I do, and a little bit of a learning curve, but it does seem intuitive, so I'm getting used to it.
Yeah, I mean, this is, before I got it, I pinpointed a few challenges. One is it's got a unique user interface. No other device from Apple has had this user interface. It doesn't have a home button. It doesn't have Touch ID.
Yeah.
I was wondering about Face ID. How easy is that going to be to use? I was wondering about the screen quality and the color. But I have to say, I like you, got mine on Friday, and having used it now for a couple of days, I'm kind of entranced.
Yeah, I agree.
The notch doesn't bother me. Does it bother you?
When I forget that it's there, and then all of a sudden I realize it's there, it's for a second,
right?
Maybe, but then it goes away, and I really don't notice.
You don't see it most of the time until you open a page that's the full screen and it's white, then the notch pops up. But I agree with you. You forget about it pretty quick.
I'm hoping Adobe updates their Lightroom CC app because
yes.
There are certain buttons there that are hidden under the notch.
Yeah.
So that needs to be.
They did just update Photoshop Express. We just got an update there. So I think they probably are updating Lightroom as we speak. Yeah.
So my question is, I don't know if there's a new feature here or if I discovered a bug. When the phone is locked and the screen is black and an incoming phone call comes in,
mm-hmm.
The ring is normal as loud as I've set it to.
Okay.
When the screen is unlocked and you could see the screen, the first ring is somewhat loud and then it becomes very muffled.
Well, that's interesting.
I try using the side buttons for the volume, but all that does is mute the ring altogether.
There are settings, I remember, because the first thing I do when I get a new phone like this is go through every single setting. And there are some settings that change how the phone behaves when you're looking at the screen. In other words, when attention is turned on versus when you're not looking. I don't know if ring is one of them. And certainly the display behaves differently. I'm guessing that's what's happening. Because now with the new Face ID, it knows if you're looking at me. So I'll have to look with you. Let's delve into the settings. My guess is there's something in there about ringing and attention. Don't ring as loud if he's looking at me. You don't need to. Be my guess. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. But which is not to say it's not a bug. I don't know.
Right. I mean, as long as it rings normal when it's black, I'm fine with
it. I think that's kind of the, you know, would make sense. I could see Apple saying, well, he's looking at it. We don't need to ring as loud. But I don't, yeah.
I googled it and nothing came up yet. So I figured, let me call the expert. You're the expert.
You know, I use this so little for phone calls, but I did get a call from my daughter this morning. I'm trying to remember. I wasn't looking at it. I don't know. I'll have to, you know what? I'm going to play with this and I'll give you some feedback. But other than that, have you gotten used to the UI?
Yeah, I mean, again, the form factor, I hate to say it, you know, I think we spent $1,229 for the Animoji. That's the
best. Yeah, there's animated poop is very expensive these days. No, it is a better screen, though. I think it's a beautiful screen. I like it that it can be a full-size screen, but in a little smaller package. I kind of like that.
Does the bluish bother you?
Not at all. But I'm used to OLED screens. All OLED screens do a little bit of that. This one is the least I've ever seen, frankly. It's as you get it at an angle, you have to have it on a white screen. And as you get it at an angle, it gets a little blue shade to it or grayish shade to it. But that's how OLEDs work.
Gotcha.
That doesn't surprise me. Yeah.
I think you mentioned earlier you just got the new Apple TV.
I did.
Are you noticing, because I got one also, I got the high storage unit.
Apple's into us for, we're into Apple for a lot of money.
this year they got me, you're right.
Oh, man.
Are you noticing that it's more contrasty than the previous version?
In the user interface or in the videos, you're watching something?
In the iTunes videos, correct.
Well, no, that may be HDR. It's definitely crisper. You're watching it on a 4K TV?
No, I have a 1080p Sony. Ah.
So that may be, it may be, because remember, it's going to give you the best it can. It's not going to try to give you 4K. I wonder. Right. I'm not using it on a HD. I'm using it on a UHD TV.
Gotcha.
By the way, Gadget Hog in our chat room has said, go to attention-aware features. It specifically does make the ring more quiet when you're paying attention.
Setting?
Yes, it's in the settings.
What is it called? Attention aware?
Yeah, I think it might be an accessibility. Let me see. He's saying it's an attention aware features. Yeah, isn't that wild? Face ID and attention require attention aware features. TrueDepth camera will check. Oh yeah. TrueDepth camera will check for attention before dimming the display or lowering the volume of alerts. So
well,
in
there you go.
There you go. General accessibility. and then if you go down to Face ID and attention, there's a little button for attention aware features. It's kind of it's all of them at once. If you turn that off, it won't mute the sounds when you're looking at it.
I'll take a look at it.
Isn't that wild? Isn't that wild?
Wow.
That's the chat room. Thank you, Gadget Hog. I thought I saw something like that. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Have a great day.
You too. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts. For this show, we talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.